and welcome to the hearing. I'm John.
And from Chicago's North Side, I am Scotto.
First, a couple of corrections. From two episodes ago, before the week off, our review of Kate Bush's Hounds of Love, we were talking about how much money she made from Stranger Things. Turns out you were right.
Yes.
Kate Bush is in a unique position in that she owns her master recordings.
Well, damn. There you go.
Basically, the master recordings are what make all the money. Usually the record company owns them because they pay for the recording studio.
Yeah.
A very small number of artists actually own their masters. So she gets paid all the way around whenever those songs are used for anything. She has so far made, at last I checked, made $1 million off of Stranger Things. So you were right about that.
Yeah, it's not a surprise either, though. Because, I mean, like I said, they use it for the whole season. Yeah. You know, it's one thing to just use it as in a glimpse or a scene.
I thought she had a standard contract, in which case she would not have made nearly as much.
Probably not, no. Yeah. Right. I'm trying to think, did she have like a deal set up, you know?
I don't know why she owns her masters. I didn't really look into it. I think she probably covered a lot of things herself. The record company probably didn't cover as much as they do for other artists in exchange for owning her masters.
Because she had the hit early, like maybe. In, you know, 79. She had more leverage,
yeah.
She had the leverage to get her own deal.
One of the corrections from that episode, Tori Amos's band before she went solo was called Why Can't Tori Read? I said Tori Can't Read.
I thought I didn't even catch that. Yeah.
And I checked out a couple of songs. They're more pop rock than hair metal, which is what I said in the episode. But still absolutely worth checking out for the cringe. Matt Sorum played drums in the band.
Oh, wow.
He went on to play with Guns N' Roses and Velvet Revolver, played in a pop rock band with Tori Amos.
I'm trying to think if it's before or after Guns N' Roses,
actually. It was before.
Yeah?
Because he joined GNR in the, I think, early 90s.
Okay.
It was actually the song from Terminator 2, Why Can't You Be Mine?
Yeah.
Was the first time I heard him with the band. I think that was like 91, 92?
Yeah, that would be 91.
So, yeah, this was way before then. And on to some listeners submitted, yes, on the hearing, and it's not Bodo. It's John Phillips. He commented
I love you,
on
Bodo anyway.
Of course. He commented on the video for this episode, saying, a favorite of mine, have you watched any of the Sunday Brunch videos Robert Fripp does with his wife Toya? I saw them quite some time ago and repressed them. I skimmed through a few tonight to prep for this. I do appreciate that Fripp has a sense of humor, and I was surprised by that. Particularly among guitar players, he is known for being very precise and exacting and very disciplined. And I just kind of presumed from that he kind of took himself too seriously. But no, he definitely does not take himself too seriously. I appreciate that. Toya just, for me, makes it uncomfortable in a few ways.
Man, I have loved Toya for some time. I know her from working with Tony Banks on a song in 86, Line of Symmetry. And yeah, so she's just so out there and fun. Mm-hmm. And so I would see these in my feed, but, you know, didn't really get a chance to listen to them until tonight. Uh-huh. And just, I mean, the Killing in the Name of, the so many great ones.
They
By the way,
like
Robert Fripp is a fantastic person to follow on social media.
Okay,
he'll occasionally post like some snarky listener comment or something and respond.
Okay, that should be with his brain and Britishness that I'm sure that's quite entertaining.
A very dry response. I think people were giving him shit for his version of Lenny Kravitz, and it's like, it was just him. I think it was just a video he'd posted of him fucking around with it. Uh-huh. And it's like, that's Fripp just fucking around, though, man. Yeah. That's going to sound better than anything you've produced for rehearsing.
Fripp First thing in the morning, hand him a guitar. He'll sound better than 90% of the guitar players on the planet.
Right.
He's fucking Robert Fripp. Like,
Yeah.
I'm so tempted to put him on that short list of like game changer greats, but I just, he's not, he's like inches from that.
Yeah, I agree. We haven't reviewed the actual album yet,
No, we'll get into that. Which brings us to this week's album, which is from 1969, In the Court of the Crimson King by King Crimson. King Crimson are a progressive rock band formed in 1968 in London. One of the most influential artists of the early 70s progressive rock movement, the band's lineup has changed many times over the years, with the only constant being guitarist Robert Fripp, literally the only person who's been on every album.
I was trying to see if any of these guys came back to anything, you know?
With Crimson, I don't think there were any
Yeah.
returns, except I think maybe Levin came back. Like,
Well, Levin wasn't on this, obviously.
no, but I mean, in his time, he has left and come back, I think. Speaking of the album, In the Court of the Crimson King is King Crimson's debut studio album. It was released on October 10th, 1969, by Island Records, produced by the band, and features Greg Lake on lead vocals and bass guitar, Robert Fripp on electric and acoustic guitars, Ian MacDonald on saxophone, flute, clarinet, bass, clarinet, oh, clarinet, bass clarinet, mellotron, harpsichord, piano, organ, vibraphone, and backing vocals. I think he went on to play in Foreigner in one of the early incarnations.
Oh, really? All right.
Michael Giles on drums and percussion and backing vocals, and Peter Sinfield on lyrics and illumination, whatever that means.
Sinfield's the only one that stays on like an extra year.
Reminder, I don't edit any songs into our reviews for copy reasons, but on our blog at johnandscotto.com, you'll find links to In the Court of the Crimson King on Spotify and YouTube so you can listen along if you'd like. Track one, 21st Century Schizoid Man. Are you taking the coward's way out?
Yes,
Okay.
there's no denying this. I
It was
mean,
a close second for me.
and in fact, I remember the first time I ever heard this song. And I could even ask, you were there. You
Was I?
played it for me
Oh.
at over 30 years ago at WOCC.
Okay. Wow. I'm glad you've been the first.
You were just like, what? You haven't heard this? Oh, okay. We'll play it next.
Yeah. As you're talking, I'm remembering this, and like, as soon as you got to the verse, your jaw hit the ground.
Exactly. I was like, "And what year is this done?"
Yeah.
This could have been put out in the 70s, 80s, 90s, zeros, tens.
This was, and I'm sure I said this to you in the moment back then too, this was a year before Sabbath.
Yeah, like this is just—I mean, this would blow minds.
This is proto-metal.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can trace the origins of metal back before Sabbath, Hendrix, Blue Cheer, but this is clearly like stabbing guitar riff, Sabbath kind of metal. Distorted vocals, which Ozzy stole.
Yes. Well, there were, I mean, that had gone around a bit. I think,
Yeah.
Lennon was using that.
Yeah, it was a big psychedelic thing.
Yeah, definitely.
The riff is just insanely heavy.
Yes.
I'd love to see a Tom Morello version.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Hearing Fripp cover Morello was pretty cool on those Sunday brunches.
Actually, I know they're not together anymore, but I can actually like hear Zach on that vocal too.
Are they not together? I thought they've been playing.
Did they get
They've been
back together? Okay,
touring.
apparently they got back together. Okay.
Zach got injured in the tour, so like that's like I don't know if they're still going, but
Because I know
they're
Morello
taking a
went on to the
break.
thing with Chuck D.
Yeah, he's done a lot of things on
Okay.
his own,
Anyway,
but
Rage covering this.
yeah, that would be. They should have done that on the Renegades of Funk album.
Yeah. They make woodwinds work in a proto-metal song.
Well, that's what this is. I mean, this is metal, it's jazz, it's rock, it's
Yeah.
just so fucking crazy.
Great distorted bass tone. I mean, Bad Religion even quoted this in 21st Century Digital Boy.
Right, I think that's how the conversation started that brought this up.
Okay.
I think it was Bad Religion, and
And I probably mentioned they quoted a Crimson song, and like, what?
then.
And yeah, and then after this proto-metal opening, it goes straight up jazz.
Right, with just these. It's also the strongest of Fripp's guitar work on the
Oh yeah.
album.
Love the
There's
guitar
too
solo.
much on the
Yeah.
rest of the album where the wind instruments just overpower him and he's just kind of background for them. But this, they're dueling here. They're
And it's
changing solos. It's just fucking great.
beautifully syncopated because I can count it. It's six, but it sounds like the timing is all over the fucking place.
Yes. That is a way to describe it. And the rhythm section's at their best here too. I mean, Lake is just I don't know if I've heard him play bass like this anywhere else, honestly.
That part, that kind of free time part where the drums come in at the end
Yeah.
of that instrumental section, Rush totally ripped that off for YYZ.
Yeah.
Loved the panned atonal saxes. You got one at each ear. And then how smoothly it goes back to that opening riff.
Right.
It just goes really smoothly back to the metal.
It
And
all
this
belongs together.
ends with utter chaos.
For yeah.
Track two, I Talk to the Wind. This is my pick for weakest.
I think it's a great contrast to the madness of track one. Peaks and valleys, and of course, it goes from Everest to a deep, deep pit of despair.
And that's not quite the deep pit of his despair. It's more of a Beatles bar ripoff.
It's like a white person blues, but you know, it's wrestling with existence in a world that just seems so dumb.
It's got some nice harmonies. I like the nice thick guitar sound. It's kind of like an electric piano. Fripp is one of the few people who knows how to use his tone control. Most guitar players just dime it and go.
I'm not sure if I really pick the Beatles that they're ripping off, though. I would say, I mean, you could say it's a Beatles pastiche, but I wouldn't. There's other derivative stuff on this album that's coming up, but this definitely would. In fact, the vocals fit the mood. That's like they're the godfathers of shoegaze here.
I do like the jazzy breaks. You gotta love some good jazz flute.
Yeah.
And at least it's the shortest song on the album.
Yeah, the flute is just amazing on this. How he it's almost like it is just a pedestal for his flute playing that he gets in the. But you know, I relate to this one a lot. So,
Speaking of relate to track three, Epitaph, my pick for favorite. This is just pure drama. Love the timpanis at the beginning. Another great kind of low tone guitar tone where he like turns down his tone.
yeah.
I'm kind of one note on that, but you'd be amazed how many guitar players don't understand how to use a tone knob and how to use that particular sound. Fripp does it beautifully. It's just got this great dramatic opening, a really beautiful bass tone. Love the vocal and the melody. It's really kind of the next one of the two, along with Schizoid Band, socially conscious songs on the album.
In a way, Talk to the Wind is kind of about that too.
I read all the lyrics tonight. I really didn't get anything from Talk to the Wind.
It's just about the reaction to what they're talking about here. I think they string it all together here. This one, though, it's a bit too close to the Moody Blues for my taste. I mean,
Okay, yeah, I get that. I get
I feel
that.
like Lake is doing a really good Hayward impression there. But such great drama, you know, the
And I mentioned
atmosphere.
Schizoid. Schizoid is an anti-war song, specifically about Vietnam.
Yeah.
And this one is about technology kind of outstripping morality.
Yeah.
Love the groove, love how the mellotron fades in. Love how pained he sounds when he gets to the chorus. I get the Moody Blues comparison, but I mean, all due respect to Hayward, great writer. I'd prefer Blake's voice by a mile.
Well, the Moody Blues were very optimistic and innocent and you know childlike, and this was taking it to a very dark
Yeah,
place.
exactly. Which just improves it for me.
Yeah.
And I love how the vocal gets even more intense in the second verse. It's a nice addition of classical guitar there. The lyrics are still relevant today, you know. All due respect to Sinfield. I mean, props to Sinfield. Great build into the break, and then it just gets really quiet. And then just, again, pure drama. It goes kind of spaghetti western, but in a really good way.
Yeah. And if you want drama, spaghetti western is the best type of
Yeah.
music you're gonna come up with.
Track four, Moonchild. This one got weird.
I'm surprised this was not your pick for weirdest as well. It's mine. It's easily the weirdest, the weakest track of the album to me.
It's just so weird. But first, it starts with this great mix of guitar and mellotron. The vocal is panned a bit to the right, which usually would annoy me, but it works because it's very quiet. I like the extra percussion that comes in. It's just kind of an annoying love song. It got monotonous 2 minutes in, and
Oof, yeah.
just as I was typing that it was getting monotonous, and this is a 12-minute song,
Right.
so getting monotonous at 2 minutes, I was worried. And as I was fucking typing that, everything fades out but the mellotron.
Yeah, I like the Mellotron work that they were doing in there in the background over it.
And then we get these sort of chilling atmospheric sounds, and then like a jazzy low guitar part on the left, some nice electric piano on the right. It gets kind of spacey at 5 minutes in. Any other band doing this would bore me, but these guys are such incredible musicians that I just kind of wanted to see where it would go next. Like, this is not a song I'm going to listen to on a regular basis, but hearing it now and having not heard it in a long time, it was
Yeah, I
just
forgot
kind
this
of.
song existed. And the version that I have on my phone, back when I had to have tracks on my phone, this was definitely not included.
Yeah, it's one of those once in a while. It's fascinating. I love how the percussion and the guitar kind of duel. At 6 minutes in, they're just kind of having fun with noises, and I was here for
Yeah,
it.
it's no.
It's just the kind of brilliant insanity that only Crimson can pull off. And this entire section has no lake.
But this has been done before. This is just a ripoff of Pink Floyd. Syd
In
Barrett.
69?
Yes.
Okay.
Like if you listen to Piper at the Gates of Dawn, they were totally taking like the beginning is a lot like Matilda Mother. The breakdown is like they just took Interstellar Overdrive and just kind of, I don't know, they made this mellow version of it, which I don't think anybody ever really needed. So it wouldn't have been bad if it was just like half the time, maybe, or a little less, but it's kind of when you have two other ballads and then you put this on it too, it just made the album a bit middle heavy, you know?
I probably haven't heard it in like 20 years or more. It's probably going to be another 20 years or more until I, bother to listen to it again. But
Because yeah, Barrett's Floyd was like 66.
okay. But, 20 years separated, it's just an interesting listen.
Yeah, it's totally not something you'd like. I can't believe I made it through it three times for this show, honestly.
That's the
I was
difference, is I listened to it once.
like, is there something I'm missing here, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know if I could have sat through it three times.
No. Like once you're in the second time, you're just like, oh my God.
Yeah, no. Once
Just
was good.
fucking stop. Because it doesn't go anywhere
No.
either. Like
It's just playing with sound.
and it's cool as a lead into the final track too, that silence into the final track, which would have been, well, we'll get to that in a
And
bit.
really, my only criticism, aside from getting bored 2 minutes in and that beginning with Lake being a little boring in general, they start developing a musical idea at 10:30, and then it just doesn't really go anywhere.
No, nothing goes anywhere. I think it's a shame too, because if they had like a more balanced, approach to this album where they did another ballad but they had another rock song in there instead, I think this album would have been in conversation with like Dark Side of the Moon and Zeppelin IV and stuff.
I think, and this is something I brought up on Zombie Takeout. We reviewed Xanadu. This is, for me, is just the week of appreciating self-indulgence.
It is extreme self-indulgence, this one.
Yeah. And I can appreciate that when it's, either completely ridiculous like Xanadu, or it's done by absolute musical geniuses.
Yeah.
And finally, track five, In the Court of the Crimson King. Another great dramatic opening. I love the classical guitar, nice flute part, and I love how it just explodes in the chorus.
If I didn't pick, Schizoid Man, it would have been this one.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this encapsulates the entire album in one song. Of course, the perfect title track, i.e.,
And it was the origin of the band's name. I think Sinfield had come up with this title, maybe he had written these lyrics before the band, and they just, on short notice, needed a name, so he just flipped the last two words, King Crimson.
It's just perfect, though. That wail in the court of the Crimson King.
Like the drum part that comes in verse two, the keyboard part right before the first break, nice harpsichord in verse three. We didn't get enough of that on the album. Like the
No.
simple melodic bass part during the flute solo. Surprised to hear Fripp on the right. He was usually on the left for most of the album.
Oh, okay.
There's a nice false ending. Not sure if I like the little childish recorder part after that.
I think the only part missing from this song, though, should have been a really over-the-top guitar solo in the end. And instead, you get kind of random stabs. But it's Fripp being modest.
And I just Googled, and yes, Ian McDonald did go to Foreigner.
Okay. Yeah, they were more of a prog band
Early on, yeah.
first. Yeah, like a lot of bands, Journey and. But the dynamic on this is so strange, it's like they're conveying the same sadness from Epitaph and Wind. But there's also these glimpses into the faces of evil that are causing the destruction, but only metaphorically, like the fire witch and the
But
grinding wheel.
I feel like this is kind of an Alice in Wonderland situation where he was really talking about something going on in probably the British government at that time and
Probably.
coding it.
Yeah. I don't know. I felt like it just all tied together in the themes of the album, the war and just the madness of life.
The worth the references in two songs and Talk to the Wind being just kind of about I'll say a melancholy, not necessarily depression, but it
Yeah.
does fit with the war themes, yeah. And this is about a corrupt ruler.
Yeah.
I see it all goes together.
And then you have the jazzy freakout moments from Schizoid Man and breakdowns that are kind of a callback to Moonchild.
Yeah,
So,
Moonchild's kind of the odd one out in a lot of ways, actually.
yes, definitely. It is the one that you could hit the eject button.
You could cut it. Not sure if I like the atonality in the final choruses on Court of the Crimson King, but it's got a great chaotic ending. Those electronic noises, the hidden track,
Yeah.
fucking creepy. There's a hidden track at like 9:41 to 10, I think 10 minutes. It's just some random electronic noises.
It's kind of an extension of what you hear in the first,
Yeah, at the
like,
beginning of
second or
Schizoid Man,
two
yeah.
of the album. Yeah.
Although that's more of like a train sound, I always thought it was.
I always thought the two were kind of
Maybe they bookend.
like they. Like Floyd came along and kind of did the same thing with the beginning and end.
I don't know, the beginning of Schizoid Man always reminds me, for some weird reason, they're nothing alike, but the Mary at the beginning of Cross-Eyed Mary. For some reason, it always reminds me of that. Anyway,
Okay.
I think this is an obvious question, but do you recommend it?
Yeah, I know Moonchild is 25% of the album,
Yeah.
but yeah, I would still recommend it because, comparing to last week's, of course, I was kind of thinking last week's was better, but the more I thought about it, they are just different in their own ways,
I don't know if I could have picked a better. I'm more familiar with this one. Like Moonchild, and this says a lot. Moonchild is the only song when I looked at the track listing that I didn't like remember very well.
I feel like beginning to end, ELP was more consistent in their album. It was like really tough for me to pick a worse track on that album.
Same.
Whereas this, they really just like they take that energy of the Barbarian and they put it in the beginning and the end and they just crank it up.
We plugged this one in last week, kind of suddenly. And after recording, I looked it up and just to see what the track listing was. All of them I could hear in my head. I think I immediately said, "Oh, fucking, I talk to the wind," because I've always hated that song. But except the one I couldn't remember was Moonchild.
Yeah, I
So I
think I.
guess that says a lot.
So, which would you pick over the two? Because I
Oh,
think
I
I'd
don't
go
know.
ELP.
I know this album really well, and I probably haven't listened to most of it in decades. Still love it. ELP was new for me, for the most part, except Lucky Man, of course.
Yeah.
So it's a hard call between the one I'm really familiar with and the novel one. I agree ELP was more consistent. But this is just weirder, and this is proto metal, and I think I gotta go with Crimson, just for the weirdness. And obviously, I very definitely recommend it.
Yeah, I recommend it.
And I wouldn't even say skip Moonchild. Give
Oh yeah.
Moonchild. You gotta hear it once.
Okay.
It's one of those necessary life experiences. If you're a proghead, you have to hear it once. You may
Yeah.
never hear it again.
Just listen to Piper at the Gates of Dawn.
And that's it for In the Court of the Crimson King. Until next time, and now for something completely different, when we'll be reviewing Wet Leg's self-titled debut album, kicking off a string of younger artists. We just had two older artists, so
Yes.
this will be a lot of fun. Until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you
There
are.
you are.